Safe Committee have proposed a sidewalk obstruction ordinance. Will supply services to those in need, provide benches to lockers to day shelters, but it will also keep our sidewalks clear to pass, welcoming and inviting for our workforce, visitors, residents, and regular downtown customers. This proposal will inform the public and give the police force tools to protect and serve. The passing of this ordinance finally will encourage retailers that are here to stay, encourage new businesses to relocate downtown, and Portland will result in greater economic development, downtown vitality, and positive experience for all. Soon we will have a new retailer in downtown and new retail vitality in Brooks Brothers opening up in the Galleria, which has been identified quite often as a linchpin in West End vitality. An ordinance going through like this will help ensure their success and the expansion of retail and economic growth in Portland. I'm here today not only as a member of the business community, but as a Portlander. I support this ordinance because it supports those in need and supports those in business. As the added service criteria of SAFE have been met, I ask you to have the sidewalk obstruction ordinance enforced and enacted. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And next are Mark Hansen, Jan Oliver, Dan Handelman. They'll be followed by Teresa Teeter, Doreen Binder, and Ginny Nelson.
Can you read the names again?
Mark Hansen, Jan Oliver.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, you have 3 minutes, and please state your name for the record.
Hi, I'm Mark Hansen from the Lloyd Center. I've been on the SAFE, part of the SAFE group from the beginning, and now I'm on the Oversight Committee. It's been a long process, nearly a year. I think we have now met the mandates that have been laid out and updated by City Council throughout the process. What originally started off with to deal with a ordinance that was getting ready to expire, from my perspective and why I was invited to be on this group, has now expanded and continued to expand as early as June, where we were given the challenge of dealing with some other issues with this as part of the implementation project. I believe we've met those obligations. I know there is some frustration, and bathrooms have been a major issue, along with showers and other things, for the Oversight Committee to deal with in the in a SAFE group as a whole. Different challenges were put before us. We talked about, and I want to address this for Randy, is that we did talk extensively about Pioneer Courthouse Square, as well as some other locations that fell within the Park Bureau. It turned out that it was a challenge. Park Bureau indicated that it would be a process to change the hours, and that's what was put before us. And unfortunately, Mr. Leonard, even though he did present this and feels that it was his intention, unfortunately his intention was not clearly made to us, so we understood that we had him as an advocate or a strong advocate for changing the hours. And whether or not it was a fault of his or a fault of ours, I'm not sure. It's Mark Hansen from Lloyd Center. But we worked very hard at this. Was City Hall considered a symbolic gesture? Possibly. But more importantly, it was a place that we felt, because of the City Council being here, that we could get a bathroom online in a fairly short amount of time and something that was safe and accessible for everyone, not just the homeless people at that time of night. As far as the fact that Mr. Leonard keeps saying that there's only X number of people that are currently using it, and that's probably so. It takes an education piece for people to understand where bathrooms are, no matter where you go. If I walked into Mr. Leonard's house today, I would ask him where his restroom was if I needed to use it. I wouldn't automatically know where it was. And so it's the same thing here. Wherever you go, you need to know and ask where restrooms are. It's not just an automatic thing. And it is an education piece. And I think as we move along, and I'm sure that once this bathroom is known to more and more people will utilize it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Jan Oliver. I'm Associate Vice President at the University of Oregon, and I'm here speaking on behalf of the University of Oregon. As you know, we've had a very long 30-year history in Portland and are beginning a sort of a new identity with a location in Old Town Chinatown in the White Stag Block. We are very pleased to be a member of the Old Town Chinatown neighborhood, clearly one of the most vibrant neighborhoods you have in Portland. And today, because one of our concerns from the beginning of our decision to locate in the White Stag Blocks had to do with issues around public safety and the perception of public safety, I'm here to say that the university is very appreciative of the work that the Safe Oversight Committee has performed. I really think this community should be extremely proud of that work because it is so broad, and I think it's more than a small thing to have a park bench or a bench in a place in a city, and a bathroom and access to a shower. I think those are issues of quality of life that really do lead people towards improving quality of life and, I would say, the health of this city. That's the kind of participant and collaborator we would like to be in Portland. We'd like to be helpful when opportunities arise, and we felt that my showing up today to say thank you to the committee and to lend our support for the ordinance moving forward was just one way of doing that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Dan Handelman from Portland Cop Watch, and I'm glad there's been a little bit of a discussion this morning that's not just been focused on bathrooms. It's been focused on the fact that if this report is accepted, the sit-lie ordinance is going to go into effect. And it's frustrating that there hasn't been more discussion about the ramifications of that. And I know we've discussed this a few times already this year, but the amenities have been discussed, and whether it's in City Hall or in other places too, we're all hoping that there's more places for people to find shelter and find bathrooms, and all this work is good and it's important. It should be done because it's the right thing to do. The question is whether or not it's okay then to trade off people's civil liberties because we've been doing the right thing. And I'm sure I'm going to take flack for making this analogy, but it's as though we're enacting some kind of Jim Crow laws after freeing slaves. Okay, we found someplace good for homeless people to go, and now we're not going to let them sit on the street anymore because we don't want to look at them. We freed slaves, but they're going to have, African Americans are going to have to use different facilities from everybody else because we don't want to have to see them or interact with them. So I think you really have to think about whether that's, this whole deal, this package deal, is something that is necessary. And we've raised concerns many times before, and I'm going to raise it again today about the issuing of warnings, the verbal warnings that are going to be happening that won't be noted down in a notebook by a police officer or by the Portland Police Portland Patrol, the downtown clean and safe. I understand won't be enforcing this law, but they'll certainly be telling people about it and saying, "Did you realize that there's a law that says you can't sit or lie on the sidewalk?" And since they look very much like police officers, people will probably get up and move away, and there'll be no record about how many times that happens. And so what we've been saying since the beginning is that this law, like the sit-lie law before it, is just about moving people along, and it's not necessarily about enforcement. And we won't know how many times it's being used and against what population it's being used, but we can predict that it's going to be used mostly against poor people and homeless people and probably young people. So, again, I urge you to consider whether or not you've done the right thing. That's great. We applaud this, the bathrooms, the day centers, the showers. It's terrific. But you haven't addressed the civil liberties issues, and particularly reminding you again that you have a part of this ordinance is that First Amendment activities have to include three or more people, sort of these arbitrary rules that you're making up about people's expressing their First Amendment rights. Thank you.
Thanks, folks.
Teresa Teeter, Doreen Binder, Jenny Nelson.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Doreen Binder, Transition Projects. Transition Projects was the first publicly funded shelter in the city, and we've been operating for almost 40 years now. And listening to the previous testimony, I too agree that I believe when was Burnside Projects at the time. When Burnside Projects first opened, it really was, and I say this as I speak in public, it was more to alleviate the Old Town entertainment district of having people on the streets at night. And the objective was to open the shelter at 5 o'clock in the evening and close it in the morning to make sure people were off the street. I'm not sure that we were as kind or conscientious of why we were doing it. I think we were doing it, and I use we, I wasn't here at the time, but nevertheless, I think the community was doing it more to clear the streets so that other people could come. We have come a tremendous distance from those days. Transition Projects then moved almost, I think, 15 years ago now, 17 years ago, to changing its name and doing a 24-hour shelter and recognizing that just getting people off the streets and out of sight was insufficient, that it was time to actually serve the homeless and do for the homeless, not just for the entertainment district. And we have come a tremendous distance. And I think that started with Mayor Clark at the time, who we're very fortunate to have on our board. Bud Clark is on our board right now, and Deborah Cafori and others. So I think we're very fortunate to have a very conscientious community. And for you, Mayor, and Randy and Sam and everybody else on the council who is looking at this very differently than we did 40 years ago. And I appreciate that. And as much as I hate meetings and I hate, that's not true, I love controversy, but as I get older, I'm getting a little less tolerant of it and becoming less like, I like controversy less, and I'm beginning to appreciate consensus less and compromise more. And I think that this process, and I've been asked this numerous times, is was the process a pain in the ass? Absolutely. Did the end result produce what we needed? For, and I've said this to Mike himself, for the Portland Business Alliance to come forward with money, which I believe was not their intent at the beginning, and for the city to come forward with money for an issue that's critical, I applaud you for. I mean, we have struggled. This agency, our agency joined Sisters of the Road, Central City Concern. I'm sorry, I have to go over. I get phone calls, and I sit at meetings where as if the social service agencies are looked as if they're the criminal. And we get yelled at because you are doing this and you are doing that. For the community to come together and look at this as a community issue is imperative. And I applaud you. And as far as the bathrooms, Randy, I appreciate it. I was in Paris one day at watching Jim Morrison's going there and trying to figure out where the hell I was going to find a bathroom. And it took, but I had money to walk into a cafe down the street and buy my way into a bathroom. I'm looking to see, excuse me, whose grave am I going to pee on? And it was very uncomfortable. You know I'm going to be honest here. But we
hopefully
have
not Jim's.
Never.
Okay.
But and it wasn't Colette's either or okay. Gertrude Stein's. But I have to tell you, it's really, I appreciate this, and this is a great start. So when I look at you and your concerns about the bathroom, one bathroom in this town is insufficient. This is a great start, and what Mark Jolin said is true. This has created more community partners than we've had before. It's raised the consciousness of what this community needs, and this is not the end. The poverty level is increasing dramatically as the rich get richer and the poor get much more poor. We're seeing a middle class that's coming to us now than we've ever seen before. And the creation of the next step of the permanent facility is important. And I want what I'm asking, we've been named that we will be doing it, but it's going to be a community involvement. I will convene, hopefully, a meeting with all the social service agencies to make sure it's done right, that we will have every part that's needed, and that we do it as a community, regardless of whether or not we are the person who operates it. But at this point, I have to tell you how much I appreciate what you have done. And Randy, all your concerns and questions are critical, because we need to keep moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. Nice tie, Mayor Potter.
Thank you.
People on it. I took this photo, I know you can't see it from there, Sunday morning during bridge paddle. 10,000 people rode past these people sleeping right in front of the police station shadow, you know, on the ramp up there. Two or three people actually were scattered out there with their bikes and their shopping carts. And at the bottom of this bridge is a nice empty restaurant called McCall's Restaurant that's owned by City Parks that I keep coming to you folks about. It has bathroom in it. It's easier for these folks to get their bikes and their carts over there to use the restroom. And I've suggested it as a day watch center as well in the past, and I'm still insistent about this. I've talked to quite a few homeless people. I've been gone during the summer for about a month in Nebraska and Iowa. Talked to a lot of folks when I got back about the bathroom in City Hall. And my concern about Pioneer Square is a lot of people have parks exclusion, so they can't even go into Pioneer Square. So they wouldn't even be able to use the bathroom at Pioneer Square. And when you go into Pioneer Square, like myself during the day, I have to go lock my bike up out at the curb. If you've got to go to the bathroom fast, and with my arthritic legs and stuff, I've got to walk out there, lock the bike up, then go in there, go to the bathroom, then go back to the bike. You can't lay a bike down in Pioneer Square or even put it near that brass railing, you know, by the entrance there to the restrooms in Pioneer Square and lay your stuff down and walk off. Everything's considered a terroristic threat anymore. So these are things you need to consider, that these folks, if one person is by themselves, they've got to find somebody to babysit their stuff. And I've done that a lot across the street from Pioneer Square for people that know me, so they can run over fast and get back fast. Most homeless people that I tell about the City Hall bathroom, they state that they're down for the night in their encampments under bridges and stuff, and that they're just going to use the bushes. Why should they walk from Hawthorne clear back up here to go to the restroom? The other thing is about, you said you shouldn't have to advertise it. Homeless people don't have TVs. Most of them go to Portland Indie Media. In fact, I posted long distance in Nebraska as watching city council long distance the day that you announced that the bathroom was going to be open, and you got a bunch of phenomenal postings thanking you the day that you announced that you were going to do it, including me. Also, I want to mention there's a TV show coming on this fall called Kid Nation. All these children are going to be put in this town by themselves and are going to have to run it. And the previews are showing how it's kind of interesting. They're going to have difficulties and stuff. You might want to take note of how they're going to try to pull this off, kids 14 and under. And if these kids can do it, then we've got to find a way to have our homeless here be able to do this. Also, the Portland Tribune. This woman is doing incredible things on her own and is hooked up with another gentleman and wants to open a farm to put our Pioneer Square children, give them jobs and things. I think somebody ought to be giving her a citation and paying attention to how she's solving the homeless problem. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jenny Nelson with Sisters of the Road. I didn't think I was going to testify, but I realized when I was putting my hand in the air that I wanted to clarify some things as a member of the committee. So I've worked on this issue for years, and I just want to say a couple of things, and Mark identified some of them. On the Oversight Committee, in fact, has had a person from Parks come and address our concerns. And I just want you to know that, all of you to know that we asked those questions about Pioneer Courthouse Square. And what we were told was that because it's the jurisdiction of the parks, that if you open one park for hours beyond what the ordinance says they're all open, that you open a can of worms. I'm happy to hear that you all can change those laws and ordinances. I want you to know as committee members that we're sitting there, you know, and asking these questions and being told that a whole bigger issue occurs. So that Randy, that's what I heard sitting there. We also were told about TriMet because of the light rail proximity to Pioneer Courthouse Square, and that's another whole can of worms. So if you can address the parks people's stuff to us about the TriMet issues and the if we let Pioneer Courthouse Square be open after 11 o'clock at night bathrooms, then we open this whole thing for people coming our way to say, well, you should keep this other park bathroom open. So I think on the bathrooms, if Pioneer Square was open, you know, geez, for the record, Sisters of the Road would like to see, you know, a creatively done porta potty, you know, all around the city. People are homeless. They've been homeless for a long time, and we need them in all parts of the city. So as far as that goes, one or not, I'm going to ask for a couple more seconds, too, just in that. I was here in 1972 when Bird's Eye Projects opened their shelter, the Everett Street Service Center, and it was not a kinder and gentler time in terms of how Skid Row was perceived, and obviously we're dealing with that perception to this day. But in terms of why that shelter was open and who was running it, it was a Catholic worker presence in the city of Portland that we've never had again until Sisters of the Road opened. And it was very much about addressing folks who were on the street at that time as human beings and not asking them to have to go through a mission service or any other kind of expectation before they could get a place for the night. And just for the historic record, I wanted to say that.
Thank you.
We have one more testifier, Carol McCreary.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Carol McCreary. I have had the pleasure to serve on the Safe Implementation Committee, and I thank you for that. In addition, I chair the Old Town Chinatown Neighborhood Association. We have a group of activists. We call ourselves FLUSH. And three of us who are on the Old Town Chinatown board have the pleasure of serving on the Mayor's Restroom Implementation Committee. And this is where we get into a lot of the nitty-gritty. But before we get into the nitty-gritty, the reason we're doing this is we're really a city with a vision. And my vision is that the right to urinate and defecate is a human right, a basic human right, and something on which our dignity and our entire identity of human beings is at stake. Now, the human rights that we have to speak, to express ourselves, to assemble, to be out in public, are protected by the U.S. Constitution and also by the Constitution of the State of Oregon. And thank God we've got people like Mr. Haldeman to monitor those rights. What is not protected, and I've been doing some research on this recently with the American Restroom Association, the right that is not protected is the right to use a toilet. There are policy gaps at the federal level regarding HHS, which I'd be happy to talk about at some other time with you or your staffs. And also there are some gaps in the plumbing codes. And I think that we're going to see some motion on the plumbing codes that's going to be coming within the next 5 years, actually down to the implementation level. But I would like us to stay centered, you know, on the big vision, just a little bit the way people do on trees. You know, this city has policies on trees. I'm not sure we have one on restrooms. We have tree experts in parks. We do have people, I think Mr. Bob Downing is probably the closest to a restroom expert we have, and we're proud to serve with him on the restroom committee. In addition, I noticed now that tree experts are being identified in every neighborhood to you know, why do trees work? Why do we have such a beautiful tree-filled city? It's because the city has put money into training people in the implementation of the tree policy. And someday down the line, I have a vision when we'll be doing the same thing for public restrooms. So thank you for the opportunity to work with you. The specific questions about implementation that you brought up, Commissioner Leonard, they're really dear to our hearts, and we look forward to discussing them with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's all.
Further discussion?
From Council?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to move to amend the report that to open, in addition to the City Hall bathroom, the Pioneer Courthouse Square bathroom, from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m.
And for the sake of full discussion, I'll second that.
Pioneer Courthouse Square has security 24 hours a day, 7 days a week currently. I mean, we don't, it's not, as it's been characterized, shut down at night. There are security guards there. The entrance to the restroom is actually not centrally located in the square itself, but actually is accessed right off of the sidewalk on 6th Avenue near the light rail tracks. I don't want to get into debating what Parks did or did not say. I will say that I have disagreed with a number of their characterizations on a variety of issues since I've been on the council. You could just add their characterization that the Parks could not open the restroom to that list. The council has the authority to open a restroom overnight if it so chooses. The intent of my motion would be that we could go ahead and implement the report and the ordinance on the condition that the restroom be open 30 days from now, and would augment the existing restroom that is being opened in City Hall that I don't think adequately serves the population that we're targeting. And I just think it's the right thing to do. It's the humane thing to do, and it shouldn't be a point of controversy. I mean, I think the last speaker spoke very well to my kind of philosophy about using the restroom, and that people be able to use a restroom in a dignified manner is important to me.
Further discussion? Call a vote on the amendment.
Adams?
I'm going to vote no, but I definitely appreciate the sentiment behind Commissioner Leonard's amendment, and wanted to make sure that we had an opportunity to talk about it. I'd like to actually see more focus on an additional restroom facility occur further towards Old Town Chinatown. I think that you made a persuasive case in terms of, you know, locating facilities where there are needs, and I think that finding a facility in the Old Town Chinatown Pearl District area would be closer in proximity to where the greatest need is. So I vote no.
Leonard.
I want to thank Mr. Adams for seconding this to give me the opportunity to discuss it. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I think that this is a, I think we've reached the milestones that we've set out for this committee, and to keep moving those milestones is like changing the goalpost. As laudable as the idea may be of Pioneer Courthouse Square or some other location in Old Town, it's time to accept this report as is and move on. This committee has labored long and hard, and, you know, the City Hall, we've heard testimony that City Hall is a good choice. I happen to think it's a good choice for a lot of reasons. Whether there's, I think there will be other, there's a need for more locations, and this committee is not going away, I have a hunch, nor is Flush, nor is anybody else who's concerned about these issues. So it's time to move on. I vote no.
Potter.
I think almost every person that testified today testified to the fact that there are not enough restrooms in the city of Portland. So I think that goes without question. In this particular instance, I would have preferred this go back to the committee to once again discuss and come back with a recommendation to the city council, because that's the purpose of the committee, is to look at these very issues. So with that, I vote no. Please call a vote on the actually, I need a report, a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Second. Please call a vote.
Adams.
I want to thank everyone who has taken their time to participate in this discussion today. I want to thank the the members of the committee and Flush and all the stakeholders who have participated in this process. I want to thank the mayor and his staff and their good work in bringing this forward. This is a huge leap forward for the city of Portland in terms of providing the necessary basic human amenities in the public realm. And our work will continue, and I hope it will continue. Aye.
Leonard?
2 points. First, the mayor's closing remarks on the motion with respect to his desire that this had gone back to the committee to be discussed. If you recall, Mayor Pardo, that's exactly what I asked you to do last Thursday in our meeting, is to take my concern, send it back to the committee, let them come back as this being their recommendation, and I would support it. And finally, I would say I appreciate how hard it is for people that are advocating, particularly for the homeless, to find receptive audiences to their concerns. And in that, you, once you're in that process, you have to compromise. You have to find a middle ground. You have to make sure that you're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, those are skills that any of us that are involved in the positions that we are in advocating for have to have to succeed. And I mean no disrespect in not supporting this report to those folks who are advocating for this population because of my vote. But I hope you'll take my words seriously, and you can call them advice or you can call them based on my own experience. But I oftentimes have to go out and check my frame of references with the community that I represent. Because if I sit in this building and listen to only the people that come in my office and lobby me and have the time to testify, it skews what it is I'm here for. I'm often called outspoken. I'm often called, I say things different than other people. And there's a reason for that. It's because I oftentimes check in with the people who are not involved in politics, who know nothing about what happens at City Hall, to keep my frame of reference correct. Because in spite of our best goals and desires, it's easy to somehow and at times to lose sight of why you do what you do. Because you get involved in discussions and debates and compromises, and the next thing you know, you've lost sight of who you're advocating for. And it's a hard thing to do, and I hope maybe this discussion will help maybe frame that advocacy better in future discussions. I'm here to assist and help in any way I can, but I also feel it's my responsibility if I don't agree, even with my friends, to say so. And to be clear about that, and I hope I've, but respectful, and I hope I've done that today. No.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank Mayor Potter and the SAFE Committee for their leadership. I don't think anybody, any mayor, has taken this issue so seriously as Mayor Potter has, as people's right to go to the bathroom, to have showers, to take showers, and to have a place to sit. And yes, it is in conjunction with the passage of a sidewalk obstruction ordinance. And I think, again, the mayor has shown leadership in crafting what I think is a fair, responsible ordinance that passes constitutional muster. And it's a good balance. And I really think that we, the city, should be proud of what we've done in the last year or so with all the benches, the shower facilities, and the restrooms that we've done. We're not through, but this is a good, solid start. And it is time, as I said earlier, to move to the next step, which will be the monitoring and oversight. So I'm pleased to vote aye.
Potter.
You know, I think for the oversight committee and the original committee that was put together to look at this whole issue, you folks have done a superb job. And you have met my expectations. You know, the two things that I think that come from this is that we see new partnerships forming that have not formed before, and more people interested in the issue and how to find solutions, not to suppress, but how to find solutions to the problem. I see what we're doing today as part of the 10-year plan to end homelessness. I am committed to seeing us do that. And recollection is that we've got about 7.5 years to go on the 10-year program, so we've got a lot of work to do in front of us. My commitment is to work with the community, with the businesses, with the service providers, with this council, to make sure that as we move along, that we do it as much in collaboration as we can. And the other thing that struck me is the fact that in addition to having new partners in this, is that we're focusing on solutions, not just a single issue. And we're looking at the people that, we are talking about, I believe, in a more humane and a more inclusive fashion. So I really support what you folks have done. I appreciate it. I know that there are differences about different parts of this, but I see this as just a next step. It's almost as if we've just sort of opened the door. We've not solved this problem, but we've opened the door to other ways to solve problems in our community other than some of the past practices. So I am very pleased with that. I am very thankful that we've got folks in the community like you, that each day you go out there. Probably the most telling thing for me this week is when I visited the Salvation Army shelter and saw that prior to this program that they had no temporary shelter, and their temporary shelter is designed to get women into permanent, long-term supportive housing. It was kind of a shock to me to find out from the executive director that of the 34 women staying now at the Salvation Army shelter, all of them had been assaulted when they were on the street, sexually assaulted, and now they're safe. I think that's what this is about, is making people safe and getting them into permanent housing. So for those of you in the trenches that have been telling us this for years, I think we've got the message. But I just think we need to move forward. And so I'm very pleased today to vote aye. Thank you all very much. Please read the 1030 time certain.
Item 983, create a local improvement district to construct streetcar improvements in the Portland Streetcar Loop Extension Local Improvement District.
Commissioner Adams.
Thank you, Mayor Potter. Today is a follow-up on the discussion that we had yesterday regarding the assembling the financing package for the Eastside Streetcar Project. What we're discussing today is a private sector contribution to the project of $15 million that will help to leverage $134 million in other funding. As I discussed yesterday, it's an important project in terms of our ability to meet our peak oil, our global warming goals. It will establish affordable options for Eastside transit riders. It will incent an estimated 2.4 million square feet in new development, just the streetcar portion of it, and the $15 million investment that is being made by the private sector will help leverage $54 million in increased property valuation. So it is an investment by the private sector that will yield improvement in property values for the private sector. The estimates in terms of cost, as we discussed yesterday, because we are still early in this project, should be viewed with a low confidence. Preliminary engineering will be available in December, January, where we will know more about the cost of this project. It's necessary for us to take some action as a first reading, no action, I should say, to have a first reading today so as to be able to meet the deadline of September 7th. We have a hearing on the vote on this will actually be September 6th, but that will allow us to meet the federal deadline for applications for New START funding. Further presentation will be made by Vicki Deedy and Greg Jones. Just Vicki Deedy.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Vicki Deedy with the City of Portland Office of Transportation. I have several things to submit to you. One of them is an amendment to the formation ordinance that it would be in paragraph 13 of the council fine section, and would revise the amount of the preliminary estimate from $152 million to $147 million, which is our current estimate that we are using. In addition to that, I have Exhibit D, which is a list of the remonstrances and shows the level of remonstrances, and I have Exhibit E, which is a summary of those remonstrances and the responses.
So is the LID capped at a total aggregate amount?
The LID is capped at $15 million. There is a provision within the LID, however, that, let's see.
And I didn't mean to interrupt. If you had more to say,
wait. I'm just trying to find my place here. Hang on half a sec. There's a provision within the LID that if for some reason the project costs changed and we shorten the alignment or whatever, that the amount of the LID would be limited to 10% of whatever the council adopted budget would be. And there's a mechanism for how you would do that without having to reform the LID.
Does that apply if the cost increase as well as decrease?
If the costs increase, I believe that we would have to go out and form a new local improvement district.
So it allows for a 10% reduction.
It allows for a reduction with the LID amount being 10% of the total.
Correct.
Okay.
So
it does not allow for us to go over $15 million, is my
understanding. Not as it's written. Right.
Well, I guess my question is there anything, similar to our last previous discussion about the council can set the hours for Pioneer Courthouse Square? Can we also set a rule saying that if the costs go up, the LID portion goes up as well? I mean, it seems like we're at a low confidence estimate here of the total cost, and yet we're capping the LID contribution. And we already heard yesterday at our briefing, although I wasn't there, but I read the handout, this is going to put a stretch on urban renewal areas and perhaps the general fund.
I would ask the city attorney.
Are we within legal rights to do something like that, to craft?
No, we are. The resolution, there's only been a resolution of intent to form the LID, and this is the creation ordinance.
Well, we have, I guess the second reading is until September, but I guess I want to flag that right now as an issue I want to pursue if we have the legal authority to do so. Because I think it's only fair that if the costs do increase, there should be a greater local contribution as well.
Okay. On June 27th, I'm just kind of back up a little bit, a little background. On June 27th, the council adopted the resolution of intent to form the Portland Streetcar Loop Extension, LID. Since that time, the Office of Transportation has, we mailed notices to the property owners, giving them the estimated assessment by property along with other information required legally. On July 30th, we posted 6 notices within the district. On the 30th and 31st of July, notice of the formation was published in the DJC, the Daily Journal of Commerce. And on August 8th, the remonstrances were received from the property owners. The remonstrances are listed in the Exhibit D that was handed out to you by property owner, property ID number, and by estimated assessment for each one of the properties. The total of assessments that the remonstrances represents is $302,094, which is 2.01% of the total assessments in the LID. For some perspective, prior streetcar projects, our remonstrances have varied between 0% and 7.5%. Exhibit E provides more detailed information and lists the reasons for each of the remonstrances for the properties, as well as the staff response to those remonstrances. In general, the remonstrances were made for the following reasons. One being a concern about the ability to pay for the assessment. Some of the property owners were unsure of the benefit to them, especially for the industrial zone properties. And others thought that the boundaries should be expanded to spread the costs over a greater area, including several property owners that thought that this should be a city, a county, or a region-wide initiative. Responses to those specific remonstrances include the fact that the city does offer financing at the time of final assessment, that the only properties exempted in this LID are federal properties, railroad properties, public rights of way, and owner-occupied residences in R1 and R2 zones only. R1 and R2, the properties are very, very small, between 1,000 and maybe 1,200, 1,500 square feet, and they are in the Elliott neighborhood.
Can you get the ability to finance, is that over what years and what terms?
Ability to finance over time, depending, it's for 5, 10, or 20 years are the terms. And I believe to go out to 20 years, the assessment must be at least $2,500. But the city will finance any amount for 5 or 10 years. In the terms, I don't know what the going bond rate is, but they're, you know, tax-exempt bonds, and it's a pretty favorable rate, which is a way to help people with the cash flow issues and this feeling of dealing with their own capacities. The methodology provides for a reduction in the rate based on the distance from the streetcar for residential properties. And this is kind of a nuanced one. It's for properties in a zone that's designated as an industrial sanctuary in Portland's comprehensive plan. Additionally, the limits of the boundaries are really consistent with prior streetcar LIDs. We've run them with 3 blocks on either side of the streetcar tracks. And the intensity of the development within 1 block versus 2 or 3 blocks on the west side adds further weight to how this boundary was set and the zones. There was one remonstrance where the information presented in an informal property owner meeting changed as by the time we got to the resolution of intent that was adopted by council. Initially, the property owners were told that all industrial zone properties would be assessed 1/3 less than the commercial properties. And this methodology was changed to apply the reduction only to those industrial zone properties that have an industrial sanctuary designation in the comp plan. So properties that have zoning of IG1 but have a comp plan designation of EX were assessed at the same rate as the commercial properties. And the reason for this is that a higher comp plan designation of EX affords more opportunities for higher density use of the property. And that is my report. The remonstrances were such a level that the council retains the jurisdiction over whether or not they form this, and then I believe we'll hear from property owners and others.
Any questions from council for Vicki before we hear testimony? Thanks, Vicki. We don't have invited testimony, right? It's just sign up.
A sign up, and we have members of the PSI board in the audience also.
Okay. But let's just do invited testimony.
Sue, how many folks have signed up?
We have 9 people signed up.
Okay. Did you say invited or signed testimony?
We don't have any.
Okay. 9 people?
Correct.
Well, the first 3.
The first 3 are Marcus Smith, Mike Bollinger, Rick Parker. They'll be followed by Daniel Deutsch, Jim Barnes, Chris Smith.
Good morning, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you each have 3 minutes.
Go ahead, Smitty, you first.
Right. My name is Marcus Smith, and I just wanted to come by this morning and relay what I had found when I canvassed the neighborhood. This is, in my opinion, it's a good idea, but we're in the industrial zone over here. I'm a property owner. I have 3 separate properties on Southeast 7th, zoned IG1. And I went to my neighbors just on the 6th and 7th of this month, and out of 46 of the 46 neighbors that I spoke to, property owners, they all opposed this because we're all in the IG1 district. And what we wanted to hear more of is how it benefits the industrial zone, having a streetcar out there. We did get some letters in by the 8th, and I guess I just wanted to relay what I heard from the property owners in the IG1 district.
Thank you.
Honorable Mayor and other members of City Council, my name is Michael Bolliger, and I'm a property and business owner in the Central East Side. I've also served on, I'm a board member of the Central East Side Industrial Council, and I'm a board member on PSI, as well as an active member on the East Side Alignment Committee. The Central East Side does offer some unique challenges for doing this alignment on the east side of Portland because of the industrial sanctuary. As a matter of fact, to my knowledge, I think we've only had one LID in our district that I'm aware of, and that's around Water Avenue. So we work very, very hard, as you know, to try and maintain the preferred alignment in our commercial retail corridor, which is Grand and MLK, which agreeably offers some transportation challenges to work with the streetcar, but all of our reviews and so far at this point look very, very favorable. So going forward, I think the LID was met with some skepticism, I think, initially, and still is in some of the industrial sanctuary because of the questionable economic benefit. I think it's very, very strong to the commercial corridor, and I think we have consensus from the property owners, certainly that I've talked to, in Grand and MLK areas. I think Rick Gustafson has done an excellent job in answering a lot of the concerns. The major concern we have or had was the limit of $15 million that we would agree to on this LID. And I share Mayor's concern yesterday at the workshop after reading about the tram and some other interesting projects that seem to go on and on, you know, how far and how far are we going to get involved in this? So I think the intent here with Rick and PSI is to have a firm commitment at the $15 million level. That's what we've agreed to. And I think also in conjunction with the fact that all five of the segments that PSI has done with the West Side streetcar so far have either been completed at or below their proposed budgets is very encouraging to us. At any rate, individually, as a property and a business owner on the main alignment, we'd have properties on Belmont and Grand. I individually look at this as a great opportunity for the private and public sectors to join forces, and I think put together a project that is going to be economically significant to downtown. And I really appreciate the support of City Council. Thank you very much.
My name is Rick Parker, and I have a family business on Grand and East Burnside at 515 East Burnside. Our business has been there since the late 20s, and I want to thank you, Mayor, and the commissioners for giving me the chance to speak here and ask your support of the LID to extend the streetcar to the east side. This may look like an advertisement piece, but it's not. What I'm trying to show you here is that is the streetcar going in front of our building in the late 40s. That's the intersection at Grand and Burnside right on the front cover of this little brochure. And so the streetcar is something that we've had. It's unfortunate that years ago it was discontinued, but I believe we have kind of a once-in-a-lifetime chance here to get it back over onto the east side, and I appreciate all that everybody has done, not only the commissioners, and the mayor, and in helping us get the funding set forth here. Also, Congressman Blumenauer and his staff for getting the federal funds and us really moved to the top of the list on the east side. That doesn't happen very often. And getting the funding set for the streetcar over there. I joined the Portland Streetcar Board about 4 years ago, and one of the main reasons I joined was not only to hopefully get the streetcar on the east side, but it's one of the few boards that I have been on in my life where projects have always been brought in under budget and on time. And I would like to say, I know there are some concerns about being over budget, but The streetcar now has been around for about 10 or 15 years, done several extensions, and I realize in the past most of it has been done with private funding, and we're switching now to more of a public funding. But this group has just done a tremendous job estimating the costs and bringing them in under budget. And knock on wood, I think the way things are set up, this should come in the same way. I've also talked to several owners up and down the street. Now, I will say they're more family businesses, but for the most part, the streetcar was there before, and they've been in support of it. Once again, I just ask your support for this LID. I really do believe it's once-in-a-lifetime chance. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Mike and Rick and Hank, who I don't think is here, thanks to you for all your work in helping put together the LID.
Are Daniel Deutsch, Chris Smith, and Michael Powell. They'll be followed by Jay Isaac and Dick Cooley.
Hi there.
Okay.
My name is Daniel Deutsch, and I'm a property owner on Broadway in Weidler, right over the Broadway Bridge. And I just wanted to give a very brief statement of support. As a property owner, I prepared a kind of a brief statement because I think that as an individual property owner, landowners suffer a much more direct impact, often thousands of dollars in assessments with no perceived direct benefit. As a property owner, I am inherently wary of any arbitrary tax on a property, and I just feel that it's something that needs to be addressed very carefully. And it's one of the biggest fears, I think, of citizens is that a proverbial Goliath will come along and, tax you on your property because these are, larger amounts. That being said, I think this one has the potential to really benefit landowners much more so than any other LID I've ever seen, and directly. If the existing Portland streetcar is an accurate indicator, it's likely that properties on this route will experience a significant increase in value as a direct consequence of the streetcar. And I think that's a really hard thing to express to a lot of property owners who are rightfully wary, and I understand in the industrial zone that happens, but it's a reality, and the statistics are there. Unfortunately, we had this experience on the west side. So, even though I emphasize with fellow landowners who've been saddled with this unexpected cost, I guess my position is the potential asset appreciation will offset any perceived financial inequities. So, in conclusion, I believe this particular LID does serve the public and private interest as it will increase community access, livability, integrate the east and west sides of Portland, and I strongly support the passing of this LID. Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor, members of City Council. Chris Smith, appearing in my capacity as chair and authorized representative for the Streetcar Citizens Advisory Committee, the committee that Commissioner Adams appoints to advise him and council on streetcar issues. The committee is strongly in support of this project and of the entire funding strategy, including the LID. We'll have a little more to say about the operating funding strategy in September when you take that up. But suffice it to say, we are appreciative to the property owners who are going to constitute this LID. LIDs have always been kind of the first step in funding our streetcar projects, with the property owners along the alignment recognizing the benefit this will bring to them, and we're delighted to see that repeated again. I would like to speak to the benefits because I think we have come to think of streetcar as a development tool, and I think sometimes we forget its transportation benefit, and certainly the property owners in the industrial areas adjacent to the commercial corridor are going to see those transportation benefits as well. Whether that impacts their customers or not will probably depend on the type of business, but I think we can certainly say it will benefit their employees' ability to get to those jobs. And my experience as someone who lives and spends a lot of his time along the streetcar alignment, it intensifies everything that happens around it, and I would be surprised if it didn't intensify the industrial uses of the sanctuary as well. And finally, as CAC chair, I'm also a member of the PSI board, sort of the link between the CAC and the board. And you know, professionally, I do software project management for a living. I have been incredibly impressed with the project management capabilities that PSI brings to Streetcar, and I will echo my fellow board members who have great confidence that this can be brought in on time and under budget. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Michael Powell. I'm here in my capacity as chairman of the Portland Streetcar, Inc., Mr. Mayor and commissioners. I would like to say a few words about the existing streetcar and put this into a little bit of context. Next Friday, day after tomorrow, we're inaugurating.